Today on In Spirit and Truth with Pastor J.D. Farag.
I'm just a man. I'm just a donkey. I just like to put it into perspective. If God can speak through a donkey, God can speak through any man. I never want to get romantic about this notion that it has anything to do with me. It does not. It does not. I mean, this is what every pastor should emulate. I like what Alan Redpath says. He says he was a shepherd, a soldier, an outlaw.
This is In Spirit and Truth, the radio ministry of Pastor J.D. Farag of Calvary Chapel, Kaneohe. Pastor J.D. is currently teaching through the book of 1 Kings. It's easy to put our church leaders, teachers, and pastors up on a spiritual pedestal. However, this is a risky thing to do, for they're fallen people just like us. Pastor J.D. describes in today's message that these leaders are simply being used by God. Godly leaders should shepherd their people towards the truth of our Lord. Now, be sure to stay with us after today's message to hear how you can get your own copy of this broadcast. Subscribe to the In Spirit and Truth podcast or download the In Spirit and Truth iPhone or Android mobile app. Now, here's Pastor J.D. with today's edition of In Spirit and Truth.
And what he's basically saying is that the Jews in that day would dare not eat at the same table with a Gentile. Why? Because in that culture, and it's that way today, when you break bread with somebody, it's a bond. It's a very intimate bond that is formed. And so a Jew would never eat with a Gentile because they don't want that bond with the Gentile. And that's why they wouldn't break bread and eat with a Gentile. And so it's a very intimate thing, this eating together. And in fact, when you take an Arab in and you feed them and they eat from your table and break bread together with you, they're loyal for the rest of their lives. So what this Barzillai, the Gileadite, did, he basically saved David's life and all of those that were with him. He was a very wealthy man, and he fed them. And listen to what he says, and let them be among those who eat at your table. In other words, they fed us, they gave us food to eat, water to drink. For so they came to me when I fled from Absalom, your brother. Verse 8, and see, now this is the third one now that David is telling Solomon that he has to deal with. So first was Joab, then Barzillai, and now you have with you, verse 8, Shimei. Remember him? This was the guy that when David was fleeing, he cursed him, threw rocks at him, kicked up dust at him, accused him falsely of having blood on his hands and overtaking the throne from Saul, which he never did. In fact, he did the opposite. He could have twice taken Saul's life, didn't, spared his life. Shimei is accusing him because, interesting, we're told Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjamite from Bahurim. Ah, Saul was a Benjamite. He was from the tribe of Benjamin. See, this guy had self-interest. Who cursed me with a malicious curse in the day when I went to Mahanaim. Notice the contrast between Shimei, who cursed him, and this Barzillai, who fed him and helped him. But he came down, speaking of Shimei, to meet me at the Jordan, and I swore to him by the Lord, saying, now this is on the way back. Remember on the way back when Absalom was killed and David is returning to Jerusalem to take his rightful place back on the throne, as God would have it, and as God would have had it all along? And the Shimei catches wind. Uh-oh. I just got done cursing David, and now he's going to, and Absalom is, and I'm dead. And he begs for his life. And David, in the, I'm going to say the heat of the moment, just the emotion of the moment. And he tells his men who are saying, David, you just say the word, and I will give you his head. Just say the word. And they're wanting, they're just, I could just picture them with her sword as this Shimei is going, oh, now you're sorry. You know, kind of like here's Shimei and here, you know, here's David going back. And I was just kidding. Can't you take a joke? Oh, my king. Oh, please don't. And they're like, just say the word. David says, you know what? No. There's been enough bloodshed. How many thousands of men died because of Absalom's rebellion? There's been enough bloodshed. No. I'm going to spare his life. And so now we've got to deal with this. There has to be justice now. And so he says, now therefore, verse 9, do not hold him guiltless. I want to come back to that, so hang on to that for a second. For you, here it is again, you are a wise man and know what you ought to do to him, but bring his gray hair down to the grave with blood. In other words, do not let him die of old age. What's David doing here? Well, he's settling some unfinished business. Remember a few chapters ago, a few weeks back, when there was a famine in the land for 3 years and David sought the Lord and the Lord answered his inquiry and told him that the reason that there was a famine in the land is because Saul had broken an oath that was made by Joshua to the Gibeonites. That's very interesting. So atonement had to be made. And God would not bless the land because that vow had been broken. Even though it was done in deception, still it had to be honored. And the land had to be atoned for. And so that's basically what we see happening here. Lest you should think that this is revenge on David's part. It's not revenge. David knows that these men, particularly Joab, pose a threat to his son. He is giving his son wise counsel on what he should do with regards to these men. And he's also making sure that his son makes good on his word, the word he gave to Barzillai, the Gileadite. But he's cautioning Solomon concerning Shimei. He knows that this guy could cause him a lot of problems and cause the kingdom a lot of problems. And he's not to be trusted. And he knows that his son is wise and he'll do the right thing. And he's telling him, do not trust him. Do not let him die of old age. You need to deal with him. Well, there's three men here that David wants to settle this unfinished business concerning. And the first one is Joab. That's first on his list. And I think for good reason. He wants to make sure that Solomon makes this right, that justice is served, that he would not die of old age because of the blood on his hand from the cold-blooded murders. And this Barzillai, very interesting. David makes sure that he honors his word. You know, to me, it speaks to a couple of things. First, David's character. David, at the end of his life, he wants to equip his son for what he knows lies ahead long after he's gone. He knows who his son's enemies are and that he cannot trust them. And conversely, he knows who Solomon's allies are and he can, in fact, trust them. Well, verse 10, so David rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. That's it. Verse 11, the period that David reigned over Israel was 40 years. 7 years he reigned in Hebron, and in Jerusalem he reigned 33 years, which means that, very interesting, because David in a lot of ways is a type of Christ. That he started his reign at the age of 30. That was how old Jesus, the greater than David, the son of David, was when he started his public ministry. Well, it's a little bit astonishing to me, actually, that David's death is mentioned in just a couple of verses. Just in passing, and that's it, and he dies. I mean, wouldn't you think that more would be written about this man? I mean, isn't this David, Israel's greatest king? Isn't this David, the man after God's own heart? Isn't this David, the sweet psalmist of Israel? And that's all? You would think that more would be devoted in writing, in recording of this man's death. But no. There are others heretofore that we've seen, and much was written about their death, and even the mourning because of their death, but not David. That's all we read. And then after this, as we're about to see, Solomon's going to do what his father had told him to do. He's going to take care of business. And he's in a clean house. There's no mourning. There's no... I'm mourning. I need some time with this. I've been trying to prepare myself for this. I mean, I love David. This is a man that I could follow. This is a man that could be my leader and my example. I like this man. I can't wait to meet this man, and I will, and so will you. So, the question remains, why isn't more written about his death? Here's my thought. That's not who David was, nor is that what David would have wanted. To David's credit, he was merely a man. He was never one to exalt himself, and he was certainly not one to allow others to put him on a pedestal, as it were. For pastors, this is a good example. Because as pastors, this is what happens. People put the pastor up on a pedestal, and I'll tell you, and you probably, as you have gotten to know me over the years, you probably noticed that if anybody tries to do that, I will not only jump off that pedestal, I will throw myself on the floor in front of that pedestal so I'm not anywhere near it. Because I know what happens there. I'm just a man. I'm just a donkey. I just like to put it into perspective. If God can speak through a donkey, God can speak through any man. I never want to get romantic about this notion that it has anything to do with me. It does not. It does not. I mean, this is what every pastor should emulate. I like what Ellen Redpath says. He says he was a shepherd, a soldier, an outlaw. We don't like to think of him like that. He was. He was a murderer, an adulterer, a king, a fugitive. For a long time he was a fugitive. A sinner, a saint, a poet. His experiences were the writing of God on his life, making him into a man after God's own heart. Adam Clark has this to say. He says, in general, he lived well, and it is most evident that he died well. And as a king, a general, a poet, a father. Think about this. He was maybe not the best father. We see that with his kids, but he was a father. And again, to his credit, he's doing the right thing in taking this time to prepare his son, Solomon, for that which lies ahead for him, a father and a friend. He has had few equals and no superior from his own time to the present day. I suppose you could say there's not another David. There was only one David. And this was a man who had a heart after God's own heart. Verse 12. Then Solomon sat on the throne of his father David, and his kingdom was firmly established. Not because of Solomon, but because of God's covenant and promise to his father David. You know, Solomon, he's going to take the throne. It's going to be firmly established. But his reign will be riddled with disobedient idolatry. In verse 14 of 1 Corinthians 10, the Apostle Paul says to the Corinthians, flee idolatry. Flee idolatry. We're going to talk about idolatry in the life of a Christian. We're going to get to know Solomon, and what we're going to find is that he is not his father. He is not like his father David. And in spite of the fact, and this is probably one of the most difficult things to wrap your mind around, in spite of the fact that he possessed such wealth and supernatural wisdom, that in fact may have been his downfall. His wealth and his many wives will end up taking him away from the Lord. He'll start serving other gods until the end of his life, when he finally realizes that all was vanity. It was all empty. G. Campbell Morgan of this said, "With Solomon began in some senses the most splendid period in Israel's history. Surely it was the grand and glorious building of the temple. The splendor, however, was largely mental and material. The spiritual is noticeably absent." You know what's noticeably absent? There's nowhere where we ever are told that Solomon, like his father, had a heart after God's own heart. There are no psalms in the entirety of that amazing and wonderful book. Not one psalm. Not one. There's only the practical proverbs because of, not him, the supernatural wisdom that God gave him. It was mental. It was material. But it was not spiritual. Listen, here's the thing. You could caption Solomon's life this way. What shall it profit a man? What shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world? Has all the wealth and the wisdom that you could possibly imagine in this world, and lose his own soul. If you don't have a spiritual to go with it, of course it's vanity. Of course it's empty. Of course it's unfulfilling. Of course it's unsatisfying. And that was Solomon's life. Well, verse 13, here comes Adonijah, the son of Haggith, came to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon. This is not his mother. His mother was the mother of Absalom. This is Absalom's younger brother. So she said, this is interesting, "Do you come peaceably?" In other words, "What do you want? I don't trust you. What are you doing here? Do you come peaceably?" And he said, "Peaceably." Yeah, right. Moreover, verse 14, he said, "I have something to say to you." And she said, "Say it." Then he said, verse 15, "You know that the kingdom was mine, and all Israel had set their expectations on me that I should reign." That's not true. "However, the kingdom has been turned over and has become my brother's," speaking of Solomon, "for it was his from the Lord." Oh, yeah. Verse 16, "Now I ask one petition of you. Do not deny me." And she said, "Say it." Then he said, verse 17, "Please speak to King Solomon, for he will not refuse you, that he may give me Abishag, the Shunammite, as wife." Remember her? David is stricken in years. He's so old and frail that he cannot stay warm at night. So as was the custom in that day, the physicians, his personal physicians, prescribed this young, beautiful virgin to tend to his needs, not sexually, tend to his needs physically, and lay in bed with him to keep him warm. And that was what they did. And we're told David did not know her, but it's believed that he took her as a concubine and what we just read would certainly support that. Does this sound eerily similar to what Absalom did? Remember what Absalom did with David's concubines in public view? See, this is not that this Adonijah wants this young, beautiful woman because she's so beautiful. No, he wants her because she was King David's concubine. You see where he's going with this? This is very clever. He's making a move for the throne. And Solomon, in his wisdom, at 16 years of age, if that's how old he is, he's going to figure that out, as we're about to see. Verse 19, Bathsheba therefore went to King Solomon to speak to him for Adonijah. Why? I don't know. And the king rose up to meet her and bowed down to her. This is his mother now. This is the king's mother. And sat down on his throne and had a throne set for the king's mother. So she sat at his right hand. Then verse 20, she said, I desire one small petition of you. Do not refuse me. And the king said to her, ask it, my mother, for I will not refuse you. So verse 21, she said, let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah, your brother, as wife, your half-brother. And verse 22, King Solomon answered and said to his mother, now why do you ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Listen to the sanctified sarcasm in what he says next. Ask for him the kingdom also, for he is my older brother, for him, and don't stop there, for Abiathar the priest, and why not even for Joab, the son of Zeruiah? What's the common denominator with all these guys? Well, Joab and Abiathar, and they went with Adonijah in the rebellion against the throne that was to be for Solomon. And so he sort of sarcastically says to his mother, are you kidding me? Why would you even ask me that? Don't you see what he's doing? He wants the throne. Why don't you just give him the throne and give it to Joab and give it to Abiathar? They all wanted Adonijah on the throne. They sided with him against me and your husband, David, the king. Now watch verse 23. Then King Solomon swore by the Lord, saying, this was very common, very customary, as the Lord lives.
You've been listening to In Spirit and Truth with J.D. Farag of Calvary Chapel, Kaneohe. Pastor J.D. will continue teaching verse by verse through the book of 1 Kings in the next edition of In Spirit and Truth. Now, we want to encourage you to visit our website, inspiritandtruthradio.com. That's inspiritandtruthradio.com. At the website, you'll find everything you need to review today's message from Pastor J.D. We also want to encourage you to visit our Facebook page. We've provided a link at inspiritandtruthradio.com. Another way the Lord is using In Spirit and Truth is through the weekly prophecy update. You can listen to the weekly prophecy update right here on this station every Friday and Saturday. Pastor J.D. is of Arab descent, and so he provides a unique perspective on the Middle East and the prophecies surrounding the nation of Israel. Each Friday, Pastor J.D. shares the first half of the prophecy update. Be sure to tune in on Saturdays for the conclusion of each prophecy update. Besides hearing the prophecy updates here on the radio, you can also watch Pastor JD's updates on YouTube. Again, we've provided a link to our YouTube channel at inspiritandtruthradio.com. We encourage you to become our Facebook friend and subscribe to the Aloha Bible Prophecy YouTube channel. And you can download a mobile app for In Spirit and Truth for your iPhone or Android mobile phone at inspiritandtruthradio.com. Thanks again for listening today, and please join us again for another edition of In Spirit and Truth. Holy.
true.